It is Wednesday, April 26, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, United States senators head to the White House for a briefing on North Korea with President Donald Trump.
He is going to drop by while this is happening in an auditorium at the Executive Office Building just adjacent to the White House.
Former President Barack Obama participates in a discussion at the University of Chicago, and a former member of the Jonas Brothers finds success in a new band. It's all ahead. All 100 U.S. senators are expected at the White House this afternoon for a classified briefing on North Korea. The meeting follows President Donald Trump's statement earlier this week that the status quo in North Korea is unacceptable and that the United Nations Security Council should impose additional and stronger sanctions on Pyongyang's nuclear and ballistic missile programs. I asked VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman whether there's a precedent for organizing such a White House briefing that includes the entire Senate.
Yes, this is pretty unusual, perhaps unprecedented. Now, this is not something that the president himself is leading. He is going to drop by while this is happening in an auditorium at the Executive Office Building just adjacent to the White House. But this is really being led by the Defense Department, National Security Council, State Department, other elements of the administration here.
And this follows, it seems, recent tensions between the United States and North Korea.
Yes, obviously they want to share some information with the lawmakers because after this happens at the Executive Office Building, there's also going to be a briefing on Capitol Hill for all the members of the House of Representatives. Now, of course, there's speculation that perhaps the administration is planning some sort of strike on North Korea, and they would want the consent of the legislative branch of government were they to do this. However, from the testimony of the Pacific Command Chief Admiral Harris on Capitol Hill today, if we're reading between the lines of what he was saying, that there really is no need at this point for a preventive strike on North Korea, but that one day, perhaps years down the line, when they have the capability to launch a nuclear weapon on an intercontinental ballistic missile, that the United States, this administration, would never stand for that. So we'll have to wait till the senators and also the members of the House of Representatives come out later today and see what they share with reporters to get a gauge of their level of concern and perhaps a hint of what they're told. When you're briefing this many everybody in Congress, there is just no way that anything that's said is going to be under wraps. So we've got pretty certain confidence that we will get some indication of what this is all about.
Well, apparently the subject, I guess, of most of this meeting will be North Korea. Are there any indications of any other subjects?
Well, who knows what will come up. Perhaps there are some lawmakers will want to know about Syria, the Middle East, perhaps Russia's activities, China's operations in the South China Sea. But obviously it appears that it is the issue of North Korea that has compelled these meetings.
That's VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, a lot of talk about something else that happened at the White House today. Earlier today, President Trump signed an executive order that pushes for the review of two dozen national monuments. National monuments that I'm sure many of our listeners have heard of, Grand Canyon National Monument, Great Sequoia National Monument in California, the Marianas Trench Marine National Monument among those 24. President Trump says it's to cut back on an egregious abuse of federal power and put the power back in states' hands to manage those lands. However, critics are saying that it could open those lands up for oil and gas drilling and development. So you're seeing already a push on social media to try to save these national parks, a lot of appeals to President Trump, to the Interior Secretary, to try to protect those lands. So I'm sure that that's a campaign that's going to continue, and we'll see if it continues to get attention and if people continue to try to fight for these places and keep them safe. There's also big news about monuments in the city of New Orleans, Louisiana, four Confederate monuments that were being demolished. Of course, these monuments were symbols of the Confederacy, the South, and the Civil War, pro-slavery side of the Civil War. So many are saying it's long overdue to remove these symbols of the Confederacy and the symbols of slavery. Now, something that I thought was very interesting, and as did social media, workers who are demolishing these monuments actually were hiding their faces. They were wearing scarves or helmets so that they wouldn't be able to be seen, so they wouldn't be targeted. Now, there are some people on social media who have actually found the companies who are doing the demolishing, and they are targeting them, and unfortunately, they're being the targets of hate speech and other things as a result of this. But it's one of the unfortunate sides of social media that people were able to find out who these people were and now are attacking them for demolishing these monuments, but others saying that it's long overdue and they're glad to see them go. Finally, another big story trending just a couple hours ago, we heard the sad news that Hollywood director Jonathan Demme has died at the age of 73 after battling cancer. Now, you may not be familiar with the name if you're a casual moviegoer, but you've certainly seen one of his movies that he's directed, probably Silence of the Lambs, his best-known picture, which he won the Oscar for Best Director for. Also directed movies like Philadelphia, and more recently, the very highly acclaimed Rachel Getting Married, which is a movie that deals with drug addiction. Lots of fans commenting on his films that he's directed, lots of fans of these movies out there, particularly Silence of the Lambs, which kind of has a cult following over the years. Many people saying, though, aside from their love of the movie, it's one of the best directed films ever. Every shot is composed perfectly and really has you at the edge of your seat. So a true Hollywood legend being mourned and missed today.
Watch it with a nice Chianti.
Yes.
Kind of a line from the film. Okay. Yes. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Donald Trump's cuts to the U.S. refugee program lead to more than 300 layoffs. A report says Northwest Pakistan sees a spike in violent attacks. President Trump will unveil the biggest tax cut in U.S. history. And the Senate confirms Rod Rosenstein as Deputy Attorney General. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA. This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at a program to help those with autism fly more comfortably. In his first public appearance since leaving the White House in January, former President Barack Obama participated in a discussion in his adopted hometown on the campus of the University of Chicago. As VOA's Kane Faraba explains, while the location of his visit has historic meaning, the focus of his conversation shed some light into what an Obama post-presidency might look like.
Thank you. Hey!
In front of students and recent graduates, former President Barack Obama returned to the spotlight on a stage with young leaders whose work and backgrounds echo that of his own when he was a community organizer on Chicago's South Side.
And I am the first to acknowledge that I did not set the world on fire.
But instead of talking more about his past, Obama focused on how his new career as a former president and his new Obama Foundation can help the next generation of community organizers.
I think what it says is that once an organizer, always an organizer.
Mark Hansen says Obama's post-presidential aspirations have the hallmarks of his campaign for president, in which the themes of hope and change helped energize voters.
I think his intention is to try to inspire a sense of public service in young people, and particularly inspire a sense of public service in young people who come from more disadvantaged backgrounds and whose voices are oftentimes not heard.
They are the kind of young people Jamal Cole helps through his nonprofit organization, My Block, My Hood, My City, which helps get youth out of isolated communities by giving them opportunities to see the larger city and world around them. Cole says his efforts captured the attention of the Obama Foundation, which gave him a ticket to attend the discussion.
Laid a blueprint on how to be an organizer. I'm an organizer, and so I always enjoy learning from him.
Cole ultimately wants to work with a foundation and hopes that might lead to more help to accomplish his goals.
I think he's going to use this platform to empower people that are doing great work, especially community organizers. A lot of times it's hard for us to get, you know, access to resources. I think his foundation has those relationships and they'll be supporting us with resources, so that's a good thing.
The single most important thing I can do is to help in any way I can prepare the next generation of leadership to take up the baton and to take their own crack at change in the world.
This is a beginning only in shaping that legacy. I think what it does is to indicate the direction that he would like his own work after his presidency to take. But I also think that he wants to highlight especially the kinds of contributions his presidency made to communities.
Contributions that are still shaping communities, most notably the neighborhood on the south side of Chicago where the former president once lived and which will host his presidential library and museum. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
Traveling can be stressful for anyone, but it's especially challenging for children with mental health issues. Sarah Ball, Director of Public Relations for ARC, spoke with International Edition's Lori London about the Wings for Autism program. ARC is the nation's oldest and largest nonprofit serving people with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Travel is stressful for everyone, and, you know, you do see the news, as do all the families across the country right now. And, you know, for parents of children with autism spectrum disorders and other intellectual and developmental disabilities, there's a lot of questions to take into consideration. You know, how is your child going to respond to the lights at the airport? Are they going to be comfortable with airport security and TSA touching them or asking them questions? All the noises, the different people, you know, having to give up your belongings to clear security, it's a sensory overload, but then also just some other issues that arise. You've been to an airport, I've been to an airport, it can be a lot.
I mean, yeah, it really can. I understand you guys are looking to address these problems and have some programs that are helping people have a better experience or less traumatic experience when they do need to take their kids traveling.
So we have the Wings for Autism, also known as Wings for All program. And what it is, it's an airport rehearsal specially designed for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. Obviously, intellectual and developmental disabilities includes children with autism spectrum disorders. And the training is actually not just for families and individuals with disabilities. It's for aviation professionals. And we have been doing it at airports across the country. We've had over 70 events at 35 different airports nationwide, and more than 2,000 families have benefited from Wings for Autism across the country.
Can you describe a little bit about what the program actually does? You say it's a dress rehearsal. Tell us a little bit about it.
It's pretty much the entire airport experience. You know, for free, families are able to go to the airport, get a boarding pass. Sometimes they're even able to take a suitcase and book it. They clear security. They get to board a plane. In Alaska, we've even had the plane taxi, and so they get the full experience. But what's great about it is they don't have to worry about buying a ticket and their child not making it onto the plane and losing that money. And they're able to address the issues and try things out, walk around the plane, see, does my son or daughter do better with a window seat or an aisle seat? Is, you know, it too stressful for them to go through security without their headset on, things like that. So it's just a full trial run. And, you know, sometimes the families make it all the way through, and sometimes they make it security and have to turn around and go back, but the pressure is taken off because they're not rushing to catch a flight. And it's also kind of a judgment-free zone because they're there with professionals. The TSA, airline, and airport staff receive training from the ARC local chapter that's sponsoring and other partners beforehand, so they know how to better support these families and individuals. And so it's, and sometimes families go back more than once to perfect it. And we've had a lot of great success stories with families saying that Wings for Autism or Wings for All have enabled our family to travel because they got to take that test run and see that it's possible. You know, we've heard families driving close to 1,000 miles because they've been too fearful of flying and the impact on their child with a disability.
So what kind of issues come up for these families with children with either disabilities, emotional issues, or autism? What would be their experience, say, without something like this? What kind of problems would they run into?
You know, so let's say a family bought 4 tickets to fly to Orlando, and they get to the airport, and they don't realize that, you know, waiting in line with all the lights and noise is going to stress out their child and, you know, they lose their place in line, they could be delayed. And then going through the entire TSA, maybe they don't realize that their child has to take off, well, the children don't have to take off their shoes, but that, you know, they have to give up their bag or give up their bear or blanket, something that's a safety to them. And if that caused a stressful situation, the child could refuse to go through. The parent, you know, might in turn get stressed. It might delay them or cause them to miss a flight. And through this program, they're able to talk to TSA, talk to airport staff. They can learn about the TSA Cares program, where TSA can help them move through security faster if they have an individual with intellectual or developmental disability or a physical disability, any special needs that need addressed, you know, TSA can help accommodate. And it's not a thing a lot of people know, but through this program, they get to learn a little bit more and find out what the triggers are for their child, too. That's what we hear a lot, that they don't know going in what is going to be difficult for their child. But they get to find out through this program, because for some people, it's actually going into the enclosed space of the runway, getting onto the plane that's difficult,
right?
Or, you know, the sounds.
And I understand airports are now also creating what are called quiet rooms for children on the autism spectrum. More and more of those are starting to pop up.
Yes, absolutely. You know, last year in Hartsfield Airport in Atlanta, they were actually launching a sensory room in the international terminal, and it was actually launched during our inaugural Wings for Autism event in Atlanta. It's just a resource for families and airports that have them. I think it's being nice for families to know if your child or loved one with a disability is struggling, hey, there's this safe space we can go, chill out, get away from the noises and the lights and everything, and regroup. So it's just another great resource, and it's a way for airports to better support these individuals and their families.
Sarah Ball, Director of Public Relations for ARC, the nation's oldest and largest nonprofit serving people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello. I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, joins me now with the latest about a dance rock band and its newest single.
Today we're talking dance. Actually, what we're talking is D-N-C-E, so they left the A out. It is a band that was put together by former Jonas brother Joe Jonas, and they've had a few hits, and I'm sure you probably heard Cake by the Ocean. They followed that up with Toothbrush. And now they're back with a brand new song. They're currently on tour promoting their debut album, which came out last year. It's called DNCE. But the new one features Nicki Minaj, and the song is called Kissing Strangers. It just came out, so we're going to listen to it right now.
Is this a new partnership with Nicki Minaj? Have they worked together before?
No, they haven't worked together. They have their own band. It's a foursome. Joe Jonas is the guy that put the group together. Actually, Joe was primarily the lead singer of the Jonas Brothers, along with his brothers Kevin and Nick. Then they broke up beginning of last year and went in separate directions. DNCE released a song, probably tongue-in-cheek because they didn't have an album at that time, called Cake by the Ocean. But the song hit top of the charts, sold millions, and everybody took them seriously. So they decided, well, you know, we better put out an album. So they have recorded a full studio album. They're touring for it right now. And when Joe is not busy doing touring and singing, He's been hired as the body, the face, the spokesperson for the Guess underwear line. So he said it's been a lot of hard work for him getting his body in shape for underwear ads, but he doesn't mind that at all. But this group is kind of an international group because it features a Korean guitarist whose name is Jinju Lee, and she's very talented. She's been a part of other groups and been a session recording guitarist for other groups as well. Very talented. So I really like their sound. They're an upbeat, happy, you know, up-tempo kind of group, DNCE. And the new song is great, but this is their first collaboration with another singer. DNCE have won many awards. Most recently, they won a Teen Choice Award for the best party song. They've won some MTV awards in Europe and here in the U.S. as well. Nominated for People's Choice Awards this year. So very popular. We better take them seriously. DNCE.
Okay. And what are the other Jonas Brothers up to?
Great question. Nick has kind of been laying low. He released his first album last year called Last Year Was Complicated. He had a number of hits off the album, Closer and several other songs as well. Kevin got out of the music business. Kevin is taking care of his babies at home. He's got a couple of young ones with his wife, and they've done a reality TV show. But he's not really in the music business right now. So Nick is, and Joe is with DNCE.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I'm kissing strangers. And that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late April last year, the government of Saudi Arabia, contending with low oil prices and diversifying energy production beyond traditional fossil fuel sources, formed a plan called Vision 2030 to reduce the country's dependence on oil and to invest in and diversify its economy. We support Saudi Arabia's 2030 plan that seeks to transform their economy and society, said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson at a U.S.-Saudi Arabia CEO summit held recently in Washington, D.C.
In particular, specific commitments to increase foreign ownership on listed companies, to boost the women's workforce participation rate from 22% to 30%, to augment the private sector's contribution to GDP from 40% to 65%, to move to free market pricing in place of subsidies in energy, to raise the share of non-oil exports from 16% to 50% of non-oil GDP, and to increase dramatically the capacity and quality of the health and education sectors through substantial capital investment.
The United States could be of great help to Saudi Arabia in this endeavor, said Secretary of State Tillerson. For Saudi Arabia's transformation to succeed, the private sector requires support from us in the public sector. This means engaging the Saudi government to ensure rule of law in commercial transactions, transparency in procurement, adherence to international science-based standards developed in consultation with industry experts, the protection of intellectual property rights, and a simpler, streamlined process to register and establish businesses in the kingdom. The U.S. government is standing by to assist Saudi Arabia in this endeavor, including by facilitating partnerships between American businesses and Saudi Arabia. The United States private sector is known for its development and use of superior technology, high-quality products, creativity, professionalism, and reliable service. What's more, U.S. companies can be relied upon to deliver on their commitments. Economic cooperation between the United States and Saudi Arabia is a win-win for both countries. When U.S. companies invest in the Saudi economy, everyone wins, said Secretary of State Tillerson. The U.S. creates jobs at home, and businesses in the Gulf region get the best business partners that the global marketplace has to offer.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.